I'm speaking to the excellent solo artist and actually member of the Tangent Project, Mr. Guy Manning in the UK. Guy actually has a new solo album that's going to be released, I guess, worldwide on December 15th. Is that correct?
That's right. That's the date I've been given, anyway.
Cyclops Records, right, puts it out?
Yeah, Cyclops, as usual.
Okay, and it's, the name of the album is View From My Window, but it's actually available already on your website, right?
Well, I tend to get the CDs in my hands about 3 months before they're sent out through worldwide distribution.
Okay.
That's the way Cyclops tends to work. They like to have a little bit of a pre-empt sales opportunity before it goes out.
Okay.
So I get them in advance, and so I'm allowed to sell my own copies.
Oh, very good. Now, Guy's website is www.guymanning, with two N's, .com, and it's a very good website. But can you talk maybe a little bit about the view from my window? We have a copy here, and we've been enjoying it very much. We think it's a very good album. You did a really nice job on it. Can you talk a little bit about the album and kind of what how you feel it came out?
Okay. Since 1999, I have released an album per year on Cyclops, which has become sort of a treadmill in some ways, in so much as I have to start thinking about writing another album virtually as the other one, the previous one, is being released.
Right.
This year I'll probably take a little bit of a rest, actually, but up to now it's been a cycle of getting demos together, writing and recording with the with the demo in mind, up to about Christmas time. Then in the new year, getting the people together that are going to be on the album with me, starting to go through a recording process, which takes about 4 months, and then into a couple of months of production. So the album, in its rawest mastered form, is ready to go to Cyclops by late summer, along with the artwork, which I also produce for all the albums myself.
Right, right.
And so by the time we get to that point in time, I'm already having to start thinking about new songs for another one. So with View From My Window, it came virtually hot on the heels from its predecessor, the Ragged Curtain album. For Ragged Curtain, the lineup had allowed me to take the band, the band of musicians, and we're a disparate bunch of musicians. People that I've picked up along the way. It's like a train journey since 1999. People have come to work on the albums and they've liked them and they've stayed, you see. So the same sort of people appear,
right,
on most of these albums. There have been some coming and going, mainly in the drumming department, a bit like Spinal Tap. In so much as all the drummers seem to be called John, and they seem to appear for one album and then mysteriously disappear.
That's funny.
And so John the drummer, the Ragged Curtain was John Bind.
Right.
And we decided, because of the sound we were getting, to go into the to an actual recording studio and to put down the backing tracks in that way for Ragged. This was okay, but it cost me an absolute fortune, as I have to produce these things. And Cyclops, wonderful as they are and very supportive as they are, don't actually give me an advance in terms of money to record.
Okay.
I produce the albums under my own steam, and they are kind enough to release them for me.
Right.
So when I came to do View From My Window, I hadn't got the type of budget I wanted to do to take it into the studio. And also, John the drummer had gone and left us with a vacant drumming seat, so there was a couple of problems to do with the album, how to actually get the drumming in. So what actually happened was that for the majority of the tracks, the drumming duties were split up between anybody who could drum, who happened to be around at the time. So I did some of it myself. Andy Tillison, from Parallel and 9 Degrees on the Tangent.
Sure.
Did some of the drumming because he's a very talented fellow and can do a lot of different things. He did some of the drums for us. And out of the blue, a fellow contacted me from an advert I'd put in a local newspaper to say he wouldn't mind coming down and having a look, and he stayed to do most of the drumming on the Epic Suite from View From My Window, which is called Sweet Dreams. And his name was Hugh Whittaker, and he used to play in a band which had achieved some sort of notable notoriety and success in the UK chart previously, in a band called the House Martins, of which the Beautiful South band came, and also Fatboy Slim used to be in the House Martins. So Hugh arrived, did his bit on Sweet Dreams, and then mysteriously disappeared again. I've been trying to get in touch with him 6 months now, and I don't know where he is, so he's He came and he went.
In typical fashion, right? Spinal Tap fashion.
This is the way a Manning album gets produced, you know. If you happen to be walking past a house at the time and you happen to have a musical instrument under your arm, beware.
It might wind up on the album.
You've got a crook, I've got a sheep's crook, and next thing you know, you're in my little recording studio, which I've converted myself.
Right.
And the same with Tim Moon, the fellow who appears to do a number of different jobs on the album, mm-hmm. whistles and cellos and things. He's a local musician who works with disabled kids in a musical way. It's sort of in the same way that David Jackson does, but on a smaller scale.
Right.
And he plays a lot of very interesting acoustic instruments. The story about Tim is when he arrived to do the session work for a few, he arrived in his car and knocked on the door, and I went to the door, and this very large 6-foot gentleman was beaming down at me saying, I'm ready, shall we get my instruments in? I said, yes. I said, I've just got to make a cup of tea. And 10 minutes later, while I was still brewing it, the instruments were still coming in through the door. The whole of the hall of the house was completely full of bags of whistles, cellos, mandolins, octave mandolins, guitars, you name it, banjos, ukuleles. I should have taken a photograph. It was an amazing experience. And Tim came into the studio, and I said, well, how about a bit of whistle? And he just sort of run out of the room and come in with a bag and said, how about this one? No. How about this one? Right. And we went through each of the instruments, trying to find them, and what I did with Tim was I recorded quite a lot of different parts and then edited him into the things I wanted to do. So I basically took him as quite like a soundscape, if you like, and edited him into place where I needed him. So the interesting little whistles and odd noises and cellos and bits and pieces that sort of populate the album occasionally are from those sessions I did with Tim on that one afternoon.
Right.
Quite interesting.
Right.
So View is just another album. You know, it's the new one.
Right.
But it's I approach each album in exactly the same way, really.
The track list on View is Phase, which is The Open Widening Sky, The View From My Window, The Rut, After the Tears in the Rain, Blue Girl, and then the Sweet Dreams that you've spoken about, which is broken into different subplots, obviously, a la, you know, kind of a classic progressive rock song, and it is a very, very, very impressive, epic piece. Do you have a song kind of on the album that you really kind of stands out to you in any way?
Well, yes, but there's a number of them, and for different reasons. You know,
right.
You never ask a composer whether which song he likes best.
I
mean, A, he's more likely to tell you the one that nobody likes, to start, and secondly, because it's a difficult decision, because depending on what day of the week it is and what mood I'm in,
of course,
it will depend. I mean, each of the songs has an interesting history behind it. Sweet Dreams I enjoyed because it was just a chance to expand the palette a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
It goes through many different changes on its way from the beginning to the end.
Right.
And putting together a large 20-minute piece of music, basically, even out of segments, is quite an interesting job. And I tend to write them, and I have done on previous albums as well. Ragged had a 20-minute epic on it as well.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, each song's different. I mean, I like the title track, mainly because it went through so many changes on its way to be what it is now.
Right.
That was a quite interesting one. It also gave me a chance to experiment with a lot more ethnic samples than I had been using previously.
Right.
Because it's it has got a relevance to the general theme of the album, which is, you know, East and West, which sort of pervades through it. And it allowed me to be able to go and basically put anything I felt in, which had a chance to show its ethnic roots, if you like.
Yeah. Now I don't want to mispronounce, but the saxophonist on the album also helps on vocals is Laura Fowles. Is that the way it's
called?
Fowles.
Lovely Laura.
And the saxophone, you know, plays a very prominent role on some of the songs. Now she's played on some of your other albums too, correct?
Yeah, she's been on every album since The Cure, which was the second one in 2000.
Okay.
So she's one of the people that came and stayed.
Stayed for a while.
I keep her in a small room in the basement, so she can't get out.
Fear once a day, right?
That has to be a luxury. I'm not that rich. Once a week. She's only a saxophonist, after all.
Now again, like I was saying, you know, basically since, I guess you said 1999, you've been putting out, you know, an album a year or so. His other albums are Tall Stories for Small Children, The Cure, Cascade, and The Ragged Curtain, and they were all, you know, your website, I think, does a very nice job of kind of going into the, each album, telling a lot of information to the listener that wanted to go and kind of check out your past history. I guess this is kind of a tough question, but if somebody, you know, heard your new album and was very impressed, what would be a good, maybe, second Guy Manning album to look into that kind of represents, you know, maybe a good springboard for the listener?
That is a difficult question.
It is, I know it is. Like,
because every album is different.
It's like choosing one of your children or something, I know.
Well,
it's a hard
question. Yeah, let's hope it doesn't get to that. But each album is, I mean, I've consciously tried to make sure that each album has its own flavour. You know, I don't approach each album and say, what did I do last time,
right,
that I don't want to do this time?
Right.
So they are different. I mean, listening to the differences between Tall Stories, which is an album of basically orchestrated songs,
mm-hmm,
and then you listen to The Cure, which was a far darker experience. I wanted to put a concept album together, and that was, The Cure was a concept album, and it told a narrative story in quite a complicated way. And it was very brooding and used a lot of sound effects, a la sort of Roger Waters, though, I suppose.
Right.
Then when I came out of that, I thought I wanted to do something completely different. So Cascade was a much more pastoral album, a lot lighter. There's a lot more space in Cascade.
Right.
And a lot lighter in feel, a lot sort of poppier, if you like. And then Ragged was more of an ensemble band album where we decided to play, keep the melodic qualities of the song, which I think goes through all the albums. There's an element of quite strong melody, I hope, in all of the albums.
Mm-hmm.
And Ragged Curtain was that, but with the band playing as it had come off the road and into the studio, so we had quite a good set of songs that we wanted to put together. And View was completely different because I wanted to do something odd again, and I wanted to use all these new samples and technology that I've got my hands on.
Right.
So it's difficult to say which album should you go to next. All I can say is that I think all the albums have got something to offer.
Right.
Perhaps go back to Ragged, go to the one previous, and
right,
if you like that one, just keep going backwards, you know.
Sure.
I mean, I think each of them, if and when I put my Greatest Hits album together, there will be a track off track off every album.
Right.
I think there are good songs, and some weaker songs, obviously, but some major songs on each of the albums as we've gone through.
Sure. Now, do you have any plans to do any live shows?
Well,
which I know is tricky.
Is difficult. My line on this is, I would love to do some live shows. When we did have the band together as a fairly regular active unit, we were able to go and play concerts. But the problem is that I think a lot of bands are finding, especially in the UK at the moment, that unless you're actually a tribute band, if you're trying to play something original, you just don't seem to get the bums on the seats, basically, to be able to pay for the experience. And when I take us out on the road, because of what I try to reproduce fairly accurately what is on the album, we're talking about three sets of keyboards,
right,
and lots of drums and percussion, and it's quite a major operation to get all this out and set up and on the road. So when you're only playing for basic expenses, it seems like quite a hard lifestyle, I think. So what we do is we tend to wait for what I would call more prestigious opportunities to arise. The Classic Rock Society in England usually give us a concert, a good support slot with a good band once a year.
Mm-hmm.
And we played with Focus last year.
Oh, really?
And played with Greenslade the year before.
Right, so yeah, I saw that.
And went down really well, sold a lot of CDs, and managed to keep our reputation intact. So we tend to wait and see what comes up from them. We'd obviously like to try and play some festivals, but we're an unknown quantity, I think, because there's so many bands out there at the moment. I mean, there's a list of pages long of up-and-comings, bands that have stayed, and bands that are reforming, you know. So we're just one of the small fish in a small pond, really. And so.
Now, again, Guy, we mentioned that already a little bit, but Guy was a part of a very important project album that was released earlier this year that was entitled Tangent, the Music That Died Alone, which I'm sure most of the listeners know about, which was kind of the brainchild of Andy Tillison of Parallel 90 Degrees. It also featured Reiner Stolt, other members of the Flower Kings, obviously David Jackson from Vandegraaff Generator. How did you wind up getting involved in that project?
Yeah. Well, most of the history of the Tangent project can actually be found on the Tangent website.
Yes.
I think Andy felt that it was very important to document the process that he'd gone through.
And it really, it did an unbelievable job. I mean, from the original emails back, and I from him and Ron Snowden, everything is on there. It's amazing how well it's documented.
Well, that was part of the joy of doing it. The point of it was that it was an odd project to do because of the way that Andy wanted to approach the task at hand.
Right.
The fact is, we were never all going to get into a studio and jam out and record the numbers and slap each other on the backs and come home, you know. It was never going to be one of those opportunities.
Right.
I was lucky enough to hear Andy's demos, you know, when they were out 18 months ago, you know. He told me he was starting to put together a solo album. What did I think of the songs? I thought they were very good. Some of them have been completely composed for this project. Some of them are variations on songs that he had already had in his portfolio, if you like.
Right.
Which have been revamped and brought back again. And seamlessly, I have to say, because all the albums sound fresh. But at that point, I was really acting as his friend, really, because we are very good friends, for foremost. We have played together through the ages, you know, since early 80s. We've been sort of hopping in and out of projects together and working together on various bits and pieces, including the predecessor to Parallel 90 Degrees. And so he was telling me that he was going to put his solo album together, and then he told me that he'd managed to get in touch with Ian Oakley at the Flower King UK rep. And Ian had kindly passed them on to Reiner. Reiner had heard the demos and passed very favourable comments back about the quality of the music and etc. Ian suggested that Reiner might actually like to play on it. Reiner said, yes, I wouldn't mind. Andy said, please do. And very politely, it became more of a project than a solo album. Suddenly, Andy was looking at involving other people. Reiner suggested that he might like to consider getting a wind player for the album as they had, you know, the Flower Kings had used wind players successfully on their albums. Andy doesn't like wind players very much, it has to be said, apart from one fellow that he has liked constantly since he was just a young lad, and that was, of course, David Jackson, Van de Graaff Generator, who Andy absolutely adores. So, because we'd already got contacts with Van de Graaff Generator through our previous connections with Hugh Banton, the keyboard player for Van de Graaff Generator, it was a fairly simple matter for Andy to get his hands on David's phone number and to make the important call. David, would you like to be on this album? Okay, says David. Andy goes back to Reiner. How about David Jackson? Reiner says, not a bad choice. and so the whole thing starts to get much bigger than it was. Then Reiner says, well, you know, you've done some great work on the demos, Andy, but you could really do with a proper rhythm section. I happen to know a couple of people who aren't working very hard at the moment. So how about using the rhythm section for the Flower Kings? Andy said, love to, marvellous. Sam Bain, who worked with Andy in Parallel 90 Degrees, was also being approached to see if she'd like to put some piano on there. And Sam really likes jazz, really is a good listener of all types of music, but loves jazz. And she decided to put some more jazzy influences into her piano work. And so consequently, when David Jackson did arrive to do his session, some of Sam's work was already in place, and David lapped it up and said, this is marvellous, this is jazzy, and I can do this with that. And so there's a lot of sort of symbiotic activities going on. As things were laid into place on the album, people heard other things evolving and were able to add their two pennies worth in.
Right.
The only person that was left off to the end was me.
Right.
I'd been pacing up and down by this point, saying, when am I going to get my hands on it then? And then he said, well, okay, I think we're just about ready to see what you can do with these things. And I'd already got some parts in mind. So it was just a matter of really honing those and getting those into the quite dense mix of activities that were already there. So once I'd recorded the backing vocals, the mandolins, the guitars, and I tried to sort of change the nature of the music where I could to feature more acoustic instruments and bring that sort of part of the equation back in. Then Andy was left with a very large job of mixing the whole thing to sound as if we'd all stood in a room slapping each other on the backs and having a drink together, which he did pretty well, I think. From listening to the album, you wouldn't believe that technology had played such a big part in it. The album had been passed backwards and forwards by the post office on hard disks and transferred via a number of different formats and computers, different systems, and travelled back and forth between the UK and Europe, you know, a number of times before finally being finished.
Yeah, it's amazing. Again, it's the recording technology in the year 2003 that now can actually be made that way. Do you think there's any chance, again, this is really, you know, I know it almost would be impossible to get everyone together, would there be any chance of ever seeing you at a festival or anything, the Tangent, do any kind of live performances?
Well, never say never is what I say on that. I mean, it's a difficult one because of the logistics of getting us all together.
Right.
Because, of course, it'd be wonderful if we could all turn up on at one... You know, like in, the old musical, the Rodgers and Hart,
mm-hmm.
where five people would be walking down a road and the music would start up in the background and everybody would start to go into a number and sing and dance as if they've known it all their life.
Right.
Well, it doesn't quite work like that in real life.
Doesn't.
There's a certain amount of rehearsal that has to be done before we can play anything.
Right.
And so the logistics of getting us all together to be able to learn the thing, rehearse it up, and then put enough time into doing more than one date, because I don't believe that any of us would really think it was worth doing it for just one night.
Right.
I mean, all that work going into it would be very strange unless it was a very lucrative offer, but I think, you know, we've got to look at this practically. The Flower Kings are working musicians. They work at this. The music they produce is their livelihood.
Right.
Andy and I both have day jobs.
Right.
We'd love to do it, obviously, but you know, we're looking to the people who rely on the money, and putting the time in is a considered investment for them. Yes, we'd love to do it, I think, is the answer. If we could ever work out a way of doing it, I think we may get around to doing it, but there's no guarantees. I think what will probably happen is we'll have to see how a Tangent 2 album might do first.
Yeah, I mean, the next question, since you mentioned it, I'm sorry, I'm clearing my throat here. Is Andy, would he think about doing a Tangent 2 album?
I think there's a good chance that he will consider doing it. I mean, we've had such an enjoyable experience doing the first one. I think, you know, if we were asked, you know, certainly Sam and I and Andy were, you know, asked ourselves whether we'd like to do another one, we'd all say yes. So then we turn our attention across, obviously, to Sweden. Would the Flower Kings be available to be able to do another one? Would they want to put the time into doing another one? I think they found it an enjoyable experience, so I don't think that's a problem. It's just the time taken out of the Flower Kings calendar to do another album, you know. So I think there's a likelihood that something will emerge, but we'll have to wait to see what Andy has to come up with, because it is his project, isn't it? And he will make any announcements about whatever when he's made up his mind exactly what it's going to be and who's going to be on it and all the rest of it.
Now, I heard Andy speaking a little bit specifically about the album and the Canterbury Memorabilia track, and, you know, singing about kind of a love for Canterbury music, and he actually mentioned specifically Caravan and Hatfield in the North. Mm-hmm. And but I also heard him say in an interview that he really wasn't as big of a fan of that type of music. I think he even said that it was more that you were the one that was more a follower of Canterbury music. Is that a true statement?
Yes, I think that is true. I mean, whenever you get together with somebody for the first time and you're discussing, you know, your musical background and who you like, you're obviously trying to find that point of reference that you can interest the other person in, and you're always trying to find something that they haven't heard of to be able to force down their throat, you see. So you become the definitive expert. I think that's just the way human nature is. Andy, when we first met, took it upon himself to introduce me to the work of Van de Graaff and Peter Hamill.
Right.
So I hadn't come across in any great deal, really. I'd heard occasional bits and pieces, but Andy thought this was a great hole in my education and proceeded to educate me for several months with all the albums from Peter Hamill and Van de Graaff. When I realised that Andy didn't know anything about Canterbury music, I took that upon myself as my duty to introduce him to all the things I thought he'd been missing out on.
Right.
And so, I was first introduced to Caravan way back in the Land of Graham Pink period, and I followed Caravan through, and the Soft Machine, Kevin Ayres, went back in time, delved into Egg, and sort of then started to come forward again, and of course, the time I was actually really getting into music properly, first time, Hatfield released their first album, Half Hill the North.
Right.
And I have to say, I bought it in the first place because I liked the cover.
That's
I like the cover art.
A lot of people do that.
Yeah, I hadn't heard the actual album, but I thought, what a great cover that is. And, of course, in England, Virgin Music at that time was operating out of a series of very small boutique shops. There was none of the great megastore empire that we know today. Virgin Records was a very small shop in a precinct where we used to sit on a very poor sponge seat with little headphones listening to albums put on in the booth. And that's where I first heard the Hatfield and North album, and I was so knocked out with it that I took it home and just pored over it for weeks. And really, everything that, you know, that I know about Canterbury has started from those days, from the early Caravans and the Hatfield and the National Health album. And so I basically played them to Andy until he got the point.
I mean, again, it's kind of a natural question, too, and this is probably part of it. I mean, you probably have so many, and again, anyone who's really interested should really go to Guy's website and read your biography, because it just documents basically your whole history of music and how you became involved in music and the amount of bands that you've kind of been involved with over the years. But what were some of your true main musical influences that have kind of led you to where you are today?
Well, yeah, well... If I give those away, people will start going, uh-huh. Yes, oh, right, okay, we can see that now, thank you. It's a bit like giving the ingredients away for what's in Paul Newman's thought. But I think it's fairly well documented and known that I am a big Jethro Tull fan.
Right.
And I think many people say they can hear that coming through. I've been told since I was 14 or 15 that when I was bashing away on the old six string that it sounded like Ian Anderson to start with anyway, or had something in common, maybe the phrasing, I don't know. But I grew up, you know, trying to play Six of the Brick, you know, in Aquilum. That's where I started, and then early Genesis. So I started with a sort of deep progressive bands. Before that, I had a passion for Alice Cooper, actually. Alice Cooper and sort of folk music from the English folk music scene. Lindisfarne, Fairport, and then went on to other singer-songwriters like Al Stewart, Roy Harper, John Martin, those types of singer-songwriters who I think are quite diverse and had something to say lyrically as well as just writing a nice tune. Because I think, to me, the lyric is just as important as the tune, and it always disappoints me when I talk to people at concerts or whatever and they say, really like your album, and I said, well, what did you think of it? And they say, well, it's really nice. And they say, well, what do you think about the content? Well, I haven't bothered listening to the words. You know, I also disappoint because I think the words are very important.
Sure.
And so, I suppose it was a split between the melodic singer-songwriters doing something different and what we would call the big five, British progressive bands. I liked Tull, Yes, Genesis, liked Pink Floyd, there was slightly to the side, but and then went into the Canterbury stuff and jazz and the Mahavishnus and Return to Forever and all the sort of fusion bands. Frank Zappa, love Frank Zappa, so followed Frank Zappa since the early 70s as well. So, I mean, all of these influences, I mean, I listen to all this stuff. I've got quite a large record collection, CD collection. And so when I come to write my own stuff, you know, I could probably trace each and every note back somewhere in my history somewhere if I wanted to. What I tend to do is to write and then stir it all with a big stick in a bucket.
Right.
You know, until it sounds hopefully original, or I've reinvented the ingredients to make it something more interesting than the sum of its parts.
Right.
So there's a lot of influences. I mean, we could spend hours talking about the things I've listened to.
I'm sure. And again, when I read over your biography, and, you know, it's obvious that in listening to your music, you're a very, you know, talented artist that writes great music, and the theme of your biography was kind of fame remains elusive, you know, and that was said as you went through these plethora of bands that have, I wrote down some of the names, but there were so many, and some interesting names too, that you kind of came in and out before you started focusing on some solo albums. I mean, again, that fame remained elusive over the years. I mean, how frustrating has that kind of been for you at this point, that just for whatever reason... is wonderful as your music is, and obviously there's a lot of other musicians I'm sure you know that are in similar positions. I mean, how frustrating has that been for you over the years?
Well, it's frustrating for all of us, I think. I mean, even looking at bands as successful as the Flower Kings in my mind are the foremost format of what we're doing at the moment, the movement. I mean, if I had to point to one band that somebody said, well, point me to a modern progressive band that's doing something interesting, I'd say the Flower King.
Yeah, we agree with that.
But look at the success that they've got. I mean, they are doing really well. They managed to support themselves.
Right.
But, you know, they're not competing with, you know, people who appear on television programs and enter competition.
And they lose money on every tour.
Exactly. And it's not fair. You know, in the greater scheme of things, looking down on it, we would say this is simply not fair.
No, if
it was a contest to do with talent, there wouldn't be any problem.
Right. That's the frustrating part, to see people that probably are, you know, doing much, you know, extremely well, that probably have a tenth of the talent of some of you guys out there, and that's frustrating for us too to see, believe me.
Well, it's true. I wouldn't put myself in the same up on the same level as Reuner and the lads, really. I mean, what I do is a slightly scaled down version and done on a much more meager budget, I can assure you. But it's equally frustrating, I suppose, when you would like more people to hear the music. It's not so much a financial frustration. It's not that I'm desperately seeking to throw in my day job and go and do this as a full-time living. I can cope with the fact that you know, I have to support my musical habit by having a full-time job, which I may not like very much, but has to be done for various reasons, obviously, to pay the bills. But it would be nice if having done all that, the album went out to a vast number of people who wrote back and said, thank you very much, it was a very nice album, what are you going to do next?
Right.
I think that would be the best thing. The problem is that our album artists at my level, and there are many others, we're all competing for a very small percentage of a very small number of people. Because the progressive movement has gone underground again, as far as I can see.
Oh yeah.
And so there aren't a lot of people out there who are coming into it fresh, who want to hear new progressive music. A lot of it depends on people who have always supported progressive music.
Right.
And how many albums can you want? When you get to past 2,000 CDs, and you're thinking to yourself, I wonder what I should buy myself for Christmas. You think, well, you look at the CD racks and you go, well, how many more CDs do I need to buy?
Right.
I mean, if we're constantly releasing, look at what's come out. We've had the Tangent, we've had the Flower King, Meet the Flower King's DVD and CD. We've had Neil Morse's solo album.
Yeah.
We've had my album, you know. And then there's going to be another, the Transatlantic DVD. And this is all from almost within the same family group,
yeah.
You know, over a two-month period.
Right.
You know, it's a microcosm of what's going on in the wider musical sphere. I suppose most of us are frustrated because we'd like to think that we are making something that will outlast us, I think. And the danger is that I think what we release, you know, is interesting, and some people, you know, will buy it, and some people will hate it immediately. And it's nice to have some people to write it, you know, that they have liked it. Small numbers though they may be. We just like more people to hear the music, I think. I think Andy feels exactly the same. We just want more people to hear it.
Right.
You know, it's not a matter of money, frustrations. It's sometimes you wonder why we do it.
Because you love it.
It takes a year of effort.
That's a lot of work.
To sort of pass into obscurity fairly quickly.
Right. Right. But I mean, again, we interact with obviously the progressive rock fans out there, and I mean they are, it has gone on the ground, there's no question about it, but the internet I think has helped at least make it a little more known again, and but you're right, there are a tremendous amount of projects. Hey, you forgot a couple too, the keyboardist and the Flower Kings released a solo album. So many, and of course I get them all, but I mean, you know, how many people do is the question, but they're out there. It's just on such a much smaller level, which is of course, you know, unfortunate.
Well, the problem is also that we're dealing with record companies which rely on sales to keep themselves going. With Cyclops, for example, which is a very small independent record label,
right.
It relies on its sales. If I can't sell, you know, some units of my album,
right. Then
next year the likelihood of releasing another one diminishes. And it has diminished since 1999, and not because the quality of the album has diminished, but because the buying public audience has diminished. People are not buying as many because they can download them. People are not buying as many because they've already got a lot of albums they don't want anymore.
Right.
You know, that the whole thing is diminishing, and so we are fighting, you know, the smaller artists are fighting for our, you know, for our slot, if you like. If we don't sell a lot of albums, then what is the incentive for the small record company to release another one?
Right.
So every year it's a struggle to get another one out.
I understand. That's why it's important for the listeners to support artists like Guy. They're making, you know, great original music on like you said, on a limited budget. You know, you can buy it straight from his website, which is www.guymanning.com. And again, it's tons of information on there. I like websites where you can get lost for a while, and yours is one that you can get lost for a while, reading the history and all the information on there. I like to end with a question that I like to give you guys, that all the artists I usually ask hate me for. But a little torture before you get off the phone. It's not an original question by any stretch of the imagination, but I still always find it interesting. If you were on a desert island and you can only have 3 CDs with you, which ones would you pick?
Which the longest?
Who was it the other day that asked me? Mike Neely asked me if it's okay if you pick box sets. I said, sure, pick some box sets. Whatever makes you happy, as long as it's only 3.
Okay. It is a really difficult question.
And, I know.
And again, it depends on, you know, what time of the year I'm going to be deserted on the island.
Right.
But let's say it's just, we don't know, in any moment in time, which 3 albums, not my CD, which 3 albums would I take with me to a desert island? Well, probably, Passion Play by Jethro Tull. Tales from Topographic Oceans by Yes.
Oh, good choice. Double disc, too.
Yes, that's an extra bonus.
Yeah, extra bonus.
Yeah, I can spend more hours working out what's happening on side 3.
Well, interesting, now that I want to interrupt, but speaking of side 3,
yeah.
I did an interview with Alan White yesterday. We're having a special Yes marathon, and he told me right off that, without even thinking twice, I asked him, what's Yes song would you like to do live that you haven't done in a long time? And without even blinking an eye, he said side 3 of Tales from Topographic Oceans. I said they haven't played it since the original tour, and he would really like to do that again. So I found that very interesting.
Well, I can understand from his point of view.
Right, because it's original.
That's a percussion.
Yeah.
It's a fantastic sound.
Right.
Absolutely superb sound of percussion. We've all been trying to splash metal plates since those days.
Sure, very interesting. All right, so we have the Jethro Tull Passion Play, we have Tales, and then one more.
Interesting. This is a tricky one, the tricky last one. I suppose it's going to have to be a Genesis album, actually, I think. Probably The Lamb Lies Down, then, because of its length. I mean, I prefer Foxtrot myself, but I think Lamb Lies Down would keep me interested longer, because it's a double album, and...
You get a little extra bang for your buck.
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
Well, I've been speaking to Guy Manning today, and Guy, I want to thank you so much for taking the time to speak to me. He's got a brand new album out called The View From My Window, which will be available on Cyclops Albums December 15th. But you can, if you go to his website, you can order it right now. And I know we've been very impressed with it. It is a tremendous release, and we wish you all the best. And I just hope that you keep making this great music. I know it must be difficult for all you guys that are kind of in maybe similar situations, but we're listening, and we are definitely appreciating what you're doing, and we just hope that you just keep doing what you're doing and keep releasing these great albums.
Oh, well, I hope to keep doing it. Even if I can't get them out, I'll probably make it downloadable from the website.
Okay, Guy, well, thank you so much for taking the time today. I really appreciate it.
Thanks very much for ringing.
Okay, take care.
See you soon.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye.